You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're listening to a little of Wagner's prelude to the opera, The Valkyrie. Opera has been around for over 400 years, and it brought just about every human emotion and a wide range of stories to audiences, ranging from royalty to everyday people. Our next guest makes the case for both traditional and modern opera as a form of entertainment that just about everyone can enjoy. Vivian Schweitzer is a pianist and music critic. Her new book is A Mad Love, An Introduction to Opera. Vivian, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Let's start with a really basic question. What makes an opera an opera? What is it?
The one thing that's very unique about opera is the voice. There's some things, elements of opera that are quite similar to musical theater, for example, but what really distinguishes opera is the sound of the unamplified voice. It's pretty rare, I think, in any form of vocal music in other genres to have singers who essentially use no amplification. So that's one thing that's very special about opera. Basically, it's the sound of the unamplified voice.
And you're probably getting asked about this a lot as you come out with this book. A lot of people look at opera and they think that's a highbrow thing, or if I go, it's a chore, you know, like making somebody eat overboiled broccoli or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You are really making the case that, no, it has been and can be something for everyone. Can you talk about that?
Absolutely. I think opera is very unfairly stereotyped as this kind of elitist thing, you know, only for certain people, and that most people can't enjoy it and you have to have a special education or whatever. And perhaps that's partly because opera did originate as a form of entertainment for royalty. But since then, it's also been a form of entertainment for the masses, and it's kind of swung both ways. And I think what's interesting these days is there's so much going on in the opera world that you really can find a form of it that appeals to you. So if you prefer not, for example, to go to an enormous traditional theater, you know, you can find a local opera company that's probably doing really interesting things and modern productions. But most importantly, you still get to enjoy the most important thing about opera, which is the sound of the voice.
For someone who doesn't have a background with opera at all, what's a good entry point? What's a good starting point for them to check it out, find something they'll appreciate, and starts to lure them in further?
I would definitely recommend operas like Rigoletto, Carmen, The Magic Flute, The Marriage of Figaro. These are the operas that most opera companies perform again and again, and there's good reason, because there are operas that include some of the most gorgeous music ever written. The plots are, by operatic standards, relatively straightforward, because as you probably know, sometimes operas get somewhat complex in terms of the plots. So these operas have more plots that are more straightforward than others. And the music's beautiful, which is why they are in the repertory of so many opera companies. So yeah, Rigoletto and Carmen, La Traviata. Those are all good ones to start with.
Talking to Vivian Schweitzer, author of A Mad Love, An Introduction to Opera. A lot of your book, you talk about the history of opera, and I want to go back to the early days and give a listen to a piece, L'Orfeo by Monteverdi. Here's a listen. So you write this wasn't really the first opera, but it was the first one that really caught on. Can you talk about it a little?
Exactly. What Monteverdi did that was different was that he created sung drama that really had an emotional impact. So he definitely wasn't the first person to set words to music. But he was the first person to do so in a way that really, really kind of affected people emotionally. So there were composers before him, Jacopo Peri, for example, who also created opera, but they somehow didn't make the same impact. So what Monteverdi did in his genius was to create a form of sung drama that really resonated, that had people in tears, that somehow impacted them in a way that previous works in the genre hadn't. So, for example, you know, there are reports of people breaking down in tears at first performances of his work, and something about the way that he set words to music was very powerful. And you can just hear from that tiny snippet.
And speaking of emotion in opera, you introduced me to a phrase I wasn't familiar with, but I love it, the rage aria. Can you talk about that?
Well, rage arias are, as you know, opera characters are often angry about something, or they're frequently feeling betrayed, and they're often feeling betrayed with very good reason, because somebody's just done something terrible to them, or run off with someone else, or they're heartbroken. So rage arias were an important part of a Baroque genre of opera called opera seria. And Handel, for example, wrote a lot of fabulous rage arias where the characters just kind of vent and lament and emote, and you just feel their anxiety so deeply.
I want to give a listen to another piece now. And this is one you mentioned, actually, Mozart and the Magic Flute. Here's a taste of that. In a Vogelfänger bin ich ja stets lustig, heißa hopsasa, ihr Vogelfänger ist bekannt, alt und jung im ganzen Land. Weiß mit dem Locken umzugehen und mich aufs Pfeifen zu verstehen. Drum kann ich froh und lustig sein, denn alle Vögel sind ja mein. So those earlier days, the operas, you write, were really that elite audience. Is it by Mozart's time that we're starting to see a more mass appeal in the opera?
Yes. And also in Mozart's time, he did something that was with, for example, the Marriage of Figaro. He actually dared to rebel against the authorities. A lot of the operas written before Mozart were very deferential to the people who commissioned them. I mean, Monteverdi, for example, was employed by the court, as was Mozart's librettist. But what Mozart did during the time when he wrote The Marriage of Figaro is he actually dared to kind of express this, you know, minor rebellion against the authorities, which was fairly notable at the time.
And there were worries at some points, cultural commentators saying, oh, I'm worried this opera is getting too populist. The common people are liking it, and that's wrong.
Right. So basically, in the opera world, you've had this kind of strange situation where the pendulum has really swung between opera being this thing that was commissioned for and performed for royalty, and then it somehow became a little more popular, and then you had various very lofty and somber and important academics saying, oh, no, we mustn't have this. We have to keep it pure and elitist, and, you know, we don't want the common masses listening to this. And then in the 19th and early 20th century, it became much more popular, and you had singers like Caruso, who gave the first Metropolitan Opera radio broadcast and reached enormous audiences. And then later in the 20th century, I think the pendulum's kind of swung back a little bit, and it's deemed again as somewhat elitist.
How about women in opera? I know Shakespeare, and you write about the comparison, Shakespeare could write parts for women, but boys had to play them because they couldn't be up on stage. Were there similar things with opera over the years?
Yes, there were. So at the beginning of opera, back in the 17th century, you had this very unfortunate tradition of the castrati, which basically were young boys who'd been castrated before puberty to ensure that their voices never broke. And the reason that this horrible thing was done was because women weren't allowed to sing publicly. So they had to have men who had higher voices and kind of balanced out the choirs. Later on, women were allowed to sing. And interestingly, opera was actually one of the few avenues that women had to earning their own money, you know, at a time when women weren't allowed to own property or really had no rights at all. Some of the famous, some of the best known women singers at the era were actually pretty successful in their own right.
Vivian Schweitzer is with us, pianist and former music critic for the New York Times. We're talking about her new book, A Mad Love, An Introduction to Opera. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you now or have you ever been a fan of opera? What do you love about it? Do you have a favorite composer, singer, director? Make the case for other people to give opera a try. Or are you coming at this from the other angle? You don't like opera or you'd like to check it out but don't know where to start? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation with Vivian Schweitzer about her book, A Mad Love, An Introduction to Opera. In case you didn't know, by the way, during the Metropolitan Opera season, you can hear performances on WPR's News and Classical Music Network, either on air or online at WPR.org. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you enjoy seeing opera, listening to opera? Have you gone to a live broadcast where they show them in movie theaters? Do you listen to it? Maybe here on WPR? If you can't imagine enjoying opera, what would push you to give it a try? Call 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Vivian, we're going to skip a bunch of history here. I want to give a taste of more modern, contemporary opera. Here's a listen. This is one I think you mentioned in your book, Powder Her Face. This is a 1995 opera by a British composer, Thomas Addis. Here's a listen. Starts with a bit of a scream.
Madam, I am the manager. You must have been expecting.
No, I have not been expecting you. I did not ask to see you.
Must have read the letters we have sent you, madam.
I have not.
You.
So, Vivian, when we think of opera, we might think of Mozart or Verdi or, you know, things from a long time ago. New opera is still happening, right?
New opera is definitely still happening. Contemporary composers aren't composing perhaps as much as their predecessors, who were really churning out dozens and dozens and dozens of operas, some of them. But there have been some really terrific operas written in the last few years. And I think it's important to note that opera is very much a contemporary art form as well. And I can think of, you know, there's at least five or six operas composed pretty recently that I thought were excellent. Missy Mazzoli's Breaking the Waves. There was an opera, Bel Canto, based on the Anne Patchett book. We had an opera called Fellow Travelers by a composer called Gregory Spears. I mean, really quite an impressive number of new operas that I think have resonated and seem to have kind of stuck around. Because the other problem with contemporary opera is sometimes there's a lot of expectation and build up for the premiere, and then the work is never performed again. That's definitely an issue.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Bob is with us in Madison. Bob, hi.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I've been listening to opera since I was 17. The first one was Carmen, and I'm still a big fan of Carmen, but I've progressed through Wagner and then on to John Adams. Maybe John Adams, then Wagner. But I really love how the music portrays characters and the stories that are told with the lyrics and the music simultaneously.
Bob, thanks a lot for the call. Vivian, can you talk about that, how the story, the lyrics, and the music all come together?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's nailed it. You know, that's one of the most incredible things about opera is how composers use the voice and music to tell a story and also to create a lot of nuance, you know, with a character, say, like Rigoletto, for example, who has a very different private persona from his public persona, or Violetta in La Traviata, and just to create all kinds of nuance in the interactions between these characters and the way the story unfolds, and to sometimes surprise us. You know, I think sometimes people are surprised that, for example, in opera, you know, the bad guys, bad people in general, get to sing beautiful music. It's not like a movie where you have, you know, the cinematic villain comes on and there's kind of the, you know, stereotypical spooky cinema bad guy music. You know, it's much more nuanced, I think, often in opera.
Thanks for that call, Bob. So one obstacle might be, hey, a lot of these are in different languages, not English, for example. How can we do our homework so we get what's going on in the story, even if it's a language we don't speak?
Yeah, it's a great question. I actually love listening to opera in foreign languages. I'm not a big fan of English translation in general. I can completely understand why an opera company might do that, because it seems somehow it would seem to render the opera more accessible if it's in a language that the local audience can understand. But I think even when a singer is singing in English, and even if they have impeccable diction, you're still going to need the subtitles anyway. So for me, one of the treats of opera is getting to listen to all these languages, like Czech, for example, that I don't normally listen to, but I love the sound of Czech. So I love going to an opera in Czechs, an opera sung in Czech. So the important thing, I think, is just to make sure you have a general idea of the plot before going, and then you'll have the subtitles. So even if you forget what's happening in Act 3, Scene 4, the subtitles are right there to fill you in. But I think language should be savored as a kind of musical element of the opera. And something that's integral to it.
We'll go to another caller now. Will is with us in Wonder Lake, Illinois. Will, hi.
Hello, how are you?
Good. What do you want to tell us about?
Okay, I don't hate opera, but I'm not a big fan. But I just wanted to plug my cousin. She's a pretty good opera singer. She's from Milwaukee. Emily Fons, F-O-N-S. Okay. I don't know if anybody's heard of her. I know she's sung across the entire world, but knowing that there's somebody from Wisconsin, maybe that will interest some more people into going to shows. I know she has sung recently in Milwaukee, but I wasn't able to make the show.
So you will check out opera, at least if your cousin's in it, though, Will, right?
Oh, yep. No, I'm friends with her on Facebook on her page, and you can listen to little samples of her and stuff like that. I know she's amazing.
Well, thanks a lot for the call. And actually, that reminds me, Vivian, I wanted to ask, we talked about contemporary composers. There's a big opera scene out there of performers, too, right?
Absolutely. I think, there's definitely a kind of trend of nostalgia in the opera world. And I guess there's, nostalgia is something that's pervasive to many, many, many genres and spheres of our life. But I think while there were certainly some extraordinary singers in the past, it is very important to note there are lots of wonderful, really wonderful singers performing today. I'm very excited to hear Anna Netrebko sing in Aida. There are lots and lots of singers. They're of all different genres who are, I think, very powerful.
Thanks a lot for that call. Good luck to your cousin. I want to not forget to talk about this. You put together, Vivian, a Spotify playlist to go along with your book, A Mad Love. Talk about the range. There's a lot of music on this.
There's a lot of music. Yes, you'll probably notice the book, especially as opera books go, is very short. The playlist is definitely quite Wagnerian, and I think it actually clocks in at 17 hours, which is just about the length of the Ring cycle. But I wanted to include music not only from operas that I think people would easily have a chance to see, such as Carmen, Bohème, Traviata, all the hit operas, but also from operas that you might not have a chance to see stage live very often, such as a Rameau opera or Messiaen's opera, just to give a flavor of all the different ways that composers used music to tell a story. So I think if you start at the beginning with Monteverdi and Orfeo, and then you go through, and I have Rameau, and then Gluck, and Mozart, and basically everyone up to about 7 or 8 contemporary composers, I think you'll hopefully get a real flavor of the extraordinarily eclectic and amazing ways that composers have created sung drama. And then, of course, if one composer speaks to you more, then, you can Google around for them.
As someone who's seen and listened to a lot of opera, when you're just listening, on a CD or online or whatever, do you feel that absence, not having the visual spectacle?
Not always. I mean, sometimes, but definitely not always. And if you're listening to an amazing singer and assuming you have, reasonably good headphones or stereo system, no, sometimes you don't. And I think that's the other point. There's so many different ways to enjoy opera. Obviously, going to the theater and experiencing it live is one main way. But you can also listen to the broadcasts, and you can listen online. You can there are lots of different ways I think you can have a powerful experience listening to the human voice.
In our last minute or so, what is your current jam? What are you really loving to listen to lately?
In terms of just which operas?
Yeah, anything you're into right now.
What am I listening to right now? I've been listening to a lot of Philip Glass recently, Satyagraha again, which is one of my very, very favorite operas. And I've been listening to a lot of Alcina, I think, because I have Alcina on my Spotify playlist. So there are a couple of arias that I seem to have on repeat and I can't quite get enough of, because it's gorgeous music.
Wonderful. Vivian, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
That's pianist and music critic Vivian Schweitzer with us to talk about her new book. It's called A Mad Love, An Introduction to Opera. We talked about that Spotify playlist. We have a link on WPR.org. It's in our segment note for today's show. And a reminder, don't forget to during the Metropolitan Opera season, you can hear performances on WPR's News and Classical Music Network, either on air or online at WPR.org. And opera fans, still time for you to share your thoughts, your favorite opera, what got you into opera. Tweet us at Central Time WPR. Coming up tomorrow here on Central Time, we'll get the latest on the Senate confirmation process for Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh as the FBI investigation wraps up. A lot of people want to lower the cost of health care in America, but how do you do that? We'll find out how one employer tackled the problem and hear some of the lessons they learned along the way. Plus, we'll find out how the new replacement for the NAFTA deal could affect high technology businesses and the customers who use their products. That and look at some of the top news stories of the day. It's all coming up tomorrow here on Central Time.